New Dissident Radio. Listen before it's illegal.
This is Tommy James, and you're listening to Ardent Atheist. We'd like to give a shout out to our two listeners in Mississippi. What's up, dudes?
Hello, Homo sapiens, and welcome to Ardent Atheist, where reason reigns supreme. Today's episode brought to you by billions of years of evolution. Sitting next to me is my co-host and producer, Heather Henderson.
Hey, everybody.
You know Heather from the Facebooks, on the intertubes, and from that time you saw her in a Starbucks and you thought you might muster up the nerve to go up to her and say hello, but panicked and slipped away, disappointed by your own self-esteem. You can find links to our guest's website, join our Twitter and Facebook feeds, and our at ardentatheist.com.
If you'd like to take part in the live chat moderated by me, go to the Facebook page for Ardent Atheist, like our page, and join in. We might use your statements in the live broadcast, so join me there now.
And please go to iTunes and subscribe to our podcast and write a review. Help us get in the top 10.
If you subscribe, I love you long time.
You may also find us on Zune. That's right, you anti-Apple Android lovers out there can subscribe to the show using your blazingly fast, virus-proof Android devices. So pull out your Android now and click on the home button and navigate to your music folder. Open whatever unstable third-party application you're wrestling with to manage your music and other audio products. Wait for it to open. Go ahead. We'll wait, too. Then do a search for Ardent Atheist, and after it returns a dozen results that have nothing to do with what you just searched for, scroll down and find our show and add it to your playlist. As for you iPhone users, tell Siri to subscribe to the Ardent Atheist podcast.
You know, you're a dick.
I know. It's true. We only have a couple of rules on our show. Rule number one.
As I said to Emery when we met in Burning Man, you can plug anything you want as long as I'm asleep and it's on some other skank.
And rule number two. If you're a listener who has ever been offended by anything, get a sledgehammer and destroy your computer now. The show has no restrictions on language or content and certainly has nothing for you, you fag-hating asshat. In the studio today, we have John Fugelsang, Stephen Paul Leyva, and Taylor Williamson. You know these folks from showbiz. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Really excited to have you on the show, all of you, especially Mr. Williamson, who's been here twice. I can't believe I got you back.
Oh, you know, it's a pleasure to be here.
Do you still believe in something?
Sounds like you're really excited to be here.
Can I go?
I knew it.
And Stephen Paul Leyva, you know, it was Provenza who called me and said, you got to put this guy on. He wrote a really killer book and you want to talk about it.
I would like to. That would be lovely.
And are you a believer or non-believer?
I'm a non-believer.
And our only believer in the room, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes, I'll be Gentile with you.
John Fugelsang. Again, thank you for being here very much.
No, I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Really, really good to have you.
It's great to be on the Ardent Atheist podcast.
He doesn't know who we are, even.
I can't believe it.
now you are a believer. You really believe in heaven, hell, God, the whole thing. Well, I don't know, hell, maybe.
No,
right?
I believe in God, and I follow Jesus, but I don't believe in hell because... you know, I think the Bible is the star of the Bible is a guy who only spoke in metaphor, followed by people who take it all literally.
I see. So that's how you put it together. It's all metaphor.
Oh, I think that, you know, my deal with... It's going to be a long talk.
No, it's all right. It's okay.
You know, my deal with the Bible is a great way to talk about the difference between facts and truth. There's a lot of truth in the Bible, not necessarily a lot of facts.
Uh-huh. Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's almost no facts, in my opinion.
Well, you know, I mean...
Stop fighting, you guys.
We're not! He and I are going to get along perfectly.
I've always said you have to fuck the facts to get to the truth.
I'm going to show you why I love John Fugelsang right now, besides his beautiful, beautiful, attractive hair.
In the wake of the horrific Tucson shootings, the state of Arizona has passed an emergency measure instituting funeral protection zones that'll keep any protesters at least 300 feet away from funeral services. And, of course, this was a response to the Westboro Baptist Church and the Reverend Fred Phelps, who are to Christianity what Jesus was to ignorance, hate, and inbreeding. You see, Westboro Baptist Church really hates gay people. A lot. They don't want to hate gay people, but God commands them to, so they're just following orders. It's kind of like Nuremberg, but with very bad teeth. And because America is a free society that doesn't stone gays to death in the streets, Phelps and his charming rapture junkie friends choose to show their devotion to the love of Christ by picketing the funerals of murdered gay people and the fallen soldiers that defend a godless society that allows them to exist. Now, I feel bad for Westboro, and not just because their only successful protest ever continues to be their boycott of every single thing Christ ever taught, but homophobia is a dreadful burden to carry, and it's every bit as natural as being gay. But Reverend Phelps, let's assume you're right, that, as you say, God hates fags. Well, where in the Bible does this come from? Because Jesus said nothing about being gay. St. Paul and Deuteronomy are really only talking about gay prostitution. And Sodom and Gomorrah is actually a story about public gang rape of angels in the streets. It is. Go read it. Fun stuff. So all you've really got to hang your hate on is Leviticus, which says, "Ye shall not lie with a man as with a woman. That is an abomination." Shall not lie with, it says. Nothing about standing up or one guy on his knees or one guy leaning against a men's room stall while a Republican senator plays lookout. But you're fine, Rev. Let's assume Leviticus is the direct, undiluted word of God. And if you believe that, then you've got to follow everything Leviticus preaches, including you've got to stone gay people to death, okay? No more of this limp-wristed picketing at funerals. However, also according to Leviticus, you have to stone to death people who work on the Sabbath. And that's Saturday, so bye-bye NASCAR. You also have to stone to death children who are gluttons or drunks, so long, Bush twins. Anyone who cuts their hair at the temples or tattoos the flesh, and I'm really going to miss the Marine Corps and half the bands I like. Adultery gets the death penalty in Leviticus, and that also includes, technically, divorce and remarriage. So what this means, my funeral picketing friends, if you really believe the part of the Bible that says being gay is a sin, then you owe it to God to kill Rush Limbaugh 3 times. And while we're at it, Leviticus also says eating shellfish is an abomination. So, Reverend, that shrimp cocktail you're shoving down your gullet is every bit as bad as George Michael night at the Ramrod Bathhouse. You see, hating gay is natural, but so is being gay. And unlike being gay, hating gay is curable because homophobia, Reverend, is an insult to God. Oh, and by the way, Leviticus does forbid men with men, but the entire Bible says nothing prohibiting women with women. And I find it just a bit amusing that God and Vivid Video have the same exact policy.
Nice. Nice. I don't care what you believe. You're a funny man.
Thank you. I should point out there is in Romans, St. Paul talks about women who turn away from their natural inclinations and do unnatural acts. And it's been perceived that that's about lesbianism. It's actually about bestiality. And it's in reference to Sodom and Gomorrah, which, again, has nothing to do with consensual same-sex relations.
It's very sexy.
Another example of why I love the Bible, because it's a hot fucking book sometimes.
Well, look, there's no bigger liberal in history than Jesus, okay? And I tell my conservative friends all the time, this Barack Obama cat's not some brown-skinned anti-war socialist giving away health care. You're thinking of Jesus.
Right.
Jesus, and this is something atheist, whatever you are, Jesus was a peaceful, radical, nonviolent revolutionary who hung out with lepers, hookers, and crooks, who never spoke English, was not an American citizen, was anti-capitalism, anti-wealth, anti-death penalty 100%, anti-public prayer, Matthew 6:5, motherfucker, anti-public prayer, never once anti-gay, never mentioned abortion, never mentioned premarital sex, and was a long-haired, brown-skinned, that's in Revelations, homeless Middle Eastern Jew.
Now,
but that's only if you believe what's actually in the Bible.
Uh-huh. But here, you're missing one really important point in that, and I agree with, conceptually, I agree with what you're saying in terms of how Jesus is portrayed, but he did say, he's not here to change
the
world.
Not how he's portrayed. He's portrayed as a right-wing guy who looks like a Bon Jovi guitar tech,
no,
is
I
what
mean
he looks
the,
like.
I mean by the Bible, not by the right.
Right.
By the Bible. The Bible, in my opinion, I read the Bible. You clearly have read the Bible, top to bottom. Have you read the Old Testament? Obviously, you know the Old Testament.
Yeah, my mother is, we'll get to my parent.
No, no, what is it?
Well, my mother is an ex-nun.
Okay.
And my father was a Franciscan brother. So I grew up admiring Jesus the way any guy admires mom's first husband. But, you know, I've come to view Jesus the way I view Elvis. I love the guy. The fan clubs scare me.
I see.
Is a Franciscan brother a black guy from San Francisco?
I know. The thing is, my father's a brother, my mother's a sister, and I'm the whitest motherfucker on earth.
So But what about where in the Bible, and I really don't want to spend too much time on this, but really honestly, what about in the Bible where it says he didn't come here to change the law? And that suggests, at least to me, that the Old Testament, laws of the Old Testament, do indeed stand according to Jesus himself.
Sure, but let's talk about the fact that the Bible could also be called too many cooks, because there are plenty of instances where Jesus did change the law. He overturned the laws on divorce. He overturned the laws on the death penalty more than once. In the Sermon on the Mount, he completely overturns eye for an eye. With the adulteress, he completely overturns the mandatory death penalty. Back then, death penalty was more grassroots. Someone committed a sin, everybody grabs a rock and throws it at him until they're dead. And Jesus was the one who
exactly
said,
right,
he among you who's without sin can cast the first stone. Now, he did it very artfully. He didn't say the law's wrong. He said, oh, go ahead and do it, just only if you've never sinned before. So, you know, he's actually kind of clever. The same with render unto Caesar when he came out as being pro-taxes. And again, here's a great example. In Leviticus, it says, if your child disrespects you, you get to kill them.
Yeah.
Okay? That's if you believe, if you're an Orthodox Christian.
I don't really mind that one.
Well.
Hey, now.
But here's the thing. There's a great chapter in Matthew where the Pharisees, the religious authorities of the day, some of whom Jesus was friends with, come to him and they say, hey, man, your guys are walking through the fields and they're working on the Sabbath. And you know what that means. They're sinning. How do you justify this? And Jesus said, well, let me ask you a question. Do you kill your kids when they misbehave? No? Oh, so you're a hypocrite too. So there's so many examples of Jesus actually flouting Old Testament law and overturning Old Testament law. Same with divorce. According to the OT, in one part, it says you can divorce your wife, a man can divorce his wife if he no longer delights in her, which
is
pretty common.
Do you believe Jesus is a real person, was a real person?
Oh, I don't. Well, let me just finish this one point, and I'll get to that. That's a whole different paragraph.
Right, right, right.
But so you know, Jesus was the one who said, with that whole thing, if you lust in your heart, you've committed adultery,
mm-hmm,
which Jimmy Carter said, I've lusted in my heart. It was very misunderstood. Jesus, in that chapter, he says, you know, if you turn your wife out in the street like that, guess what, Orthodox Jews? You've made an adulterer out of her and out of you too. And that was his way of saying, don't be a douchebag to your wife. Because in the same chapter, with that lust in your heart, he says, if you look upon a woman with lustful looks, you've committed adultery in your heart. What he's talking about is sexual harassment. Okay, he's talking about don't fucking sneer at a woman when she's out here in the market to buy her spelt. If you if you look upon a woman with lustful looks, he's using their own orthodoxy to make them stop being woman-hating douchebags, and it's where he's the only true feminist in the Bible.
Yeah.
But isn't it the girl's fault?
It's always the girl's fault. Always, man, because those ancient Hebrew women showed way too much ankle. You know, this is pre-burqa. I mean, the Muslims perfected that, thank God.
But all that makes him a cool guy, but doesn't actually make him the son of God.
I agree.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. What? What do you mean you agree?
I don't really care about the miracles.
Yeah.
It's not interesting to me. I mean,
well, do you think there's a God?
Oh, I think there's a God, yeah. And I don't believe God's an invisible Caucasian man with a giant fuck-off beard in the sky throwing lightning bolts down when you break one of his 10 little rules that are really 9. But yeah, I you know.
Do you think there's a God that sent his only son to die for our sins?
I don't. Again, this goes back to if you believe in the Bible as truth or facts. I will take Jesus as the living embodiment of a loving God's love. Okay, that works for me. That makes sense to me. But can I prove any of these miracles? I learned a long time ago it's not in my interest. I don't care. In his own lifetime, and I'm sure you all know this, Thomas Jefferson published, post-White House, his own Bible, where he cut all the miracles out.
Yeah.
Everything he couldn't prove, everything that wasn't provable, he took out for scientific reason, and he published this Gospel of Jesus, just the story, just the teachings, back when cutting and pasting actually meant something and took some time.
Right.
Can you imagine a president even acknowledging that book exists today?
Right. Yeah.
You know, and again, I can talk about Christian hypocrisy all day long because Jesus is the most famous victim of the death penalty in history.
Well, that's one of the things I love about you is you clearly believe in Jesus, you clearly believe in God, you clearly believe in heaven and that whatever. I'm not trying to pick on you when I say
you're picking and choosing.
But
go
you
ahead,
clearly believe in that. No.
Yeah.
But then I love how you stand up to the right. It's really
beautiful.
Yeah,
because they're not Christian. Listen, you know, here's one thing that liberals always make a mistake about when we say, oh, religion's responsible for all the war and rape and violence and oppression.
Right.
No, not religion. Far right-wing fundamentalist religion. The overwhelming majority of Christians, Jews, and Muslims on earth are getting along just fine right now this very fucking minute.
Right.
It's the far right fundamentalists who make the rest of our lives really interesting. They have 5 things in common. Every religion The more far right you are, the more fundamentalist you are, five things they all have in common. Number one, they hate the gays. Number two, they put women down. Number three, they think violence is okay to solve problems. Number four, they put down other religions because God likes me more. And number five, I forget because I'm really tired and high on cold medicine. But it's, again, it's the far right fundamentalist douchebags. So, you know, we can sit around and say all the horrible things religion's done, and I'll be the first to admit it. And
but
I'll go off on
any. Don't the moderates support these extremists? That really is, in my opinion, the problem.
The moderates problem is the moderates. Most of the moderates are asleep. I completely agree. They're
sleepwalking
through it. Yeah, exactly. It's the liberals of all the faiths who are the ones who are trying to make the world better.
Yeah.
I'm on the side, you know, it's like, what side are you on in the Israeli-Palestine debate? I'm on the side of anybody on any side who's trying to solve these problems nonviolently.
Yeah.
That's the Christ-based approach. It's the Gandhi-based approach. It's the sanity-based approach.
He was very mean to those money changers in their tables.
He wasn't. They were being very mean to the poor. He did that because they were charging too much interest on poor people with loans, and Jesus said, you've turned my father's house into a den of thieves. Today he'd be called a socialist.
Yeah.
And Acts of the Apostles is actually a pure opt-in communism. That's how they lived. Everything was shared. If you wanted to be a part of it, you were a part of it. It wasn't mandatory.
Yeah.
But today, if Jesus came back to speak, you couldn't hear him because his followers would be screaming socialist too loud to hear a thing the guy said.
Right.
I don't care about the miracles. You know, I think the miracles are great because the miracles, well, it's like Santa Claus. It's how you get the kids hooked. Same with Adam and Eve. I mean, I don't think the people who wrote Genesis ever intended it to be taken literally.
But we have a real big problem in America and all over the world where there are people out there preaching and taking this shit literally. And that's where, I mean,
it's okay
to say the things that you're saying, but there's people out there who will totally disagree with
you. Well, I know they will. That's why I'm saying it. You should see the hate mail I get from these so-called Christians.
I imagine you get more than we do.
Last night on Twitter, I made a comment about Christians who support the death penalty, and I had Catholics who support the death penalty because the Pope is every bit as much against the death penalty as he is against abortion. You don't hear that in America because it doesn't raise any money.
Right.
Okay, you'll hear that in Europe. It raises money over there. The Vatican's a business. And I actually had a guy say, I'm a Catholic. Fuck you. Well, there's the love of Christ, my friend.
Yeah, right. Hallelujah.
You know, but you're always going to get that hate, of course, directed from fundamentalists of any faith, but that's the point.
But I don't even know if it's that, though. I think it's maybe people – I deal with people who may not be fundamentalists, but I deal with people who just are ignorant.
Well,
and
of course.
But need to be, you know – pushed over.
Well, of course, victory. Jesus surrounded himself with ignorant knuckleheads. That's why he's telling them off all the time. It's like the Three Stooges. He's always like, shut up, Mo, and smacking him in the face. Peter. All the time. But look, it's great to say that religion is responsible for all the problems, and we can do
that. No one says that.
A lot of people. Liberals say that all the time. My friends say it all the time, and I get it. Yes, subordination of women. Yes, hating the gays. Yes, war, greed, famine, horrible things done because my God's got a bigger dick than your God. However, we have no way of measuring how much religion played a role in civilizing the species.
We absolutely have
We have no way of measuring how many murders, rapes, and crimes were not committed and are not committed every day because somebody has a superstitious fear of hell.
I thought you were going to say there's no way of measuring how big God's dick is.
There's no way of measuring the coming of the Lord. Thy rod and thy staff.
But we do know, we do know.
Is that a rim shot sound effect I just heard?
Did you do a rim shot? What'd you do?
No.
Sorry. It's a.
We do know that fundamentalist beliefs cause and support wars and get and convince
Hell
people
yes,
to go. These things we know.
Exactly. Because fundamentalists don't think they're better than you. They think God thinks they're
That's
better
right.
than you. And these are the people who read the Bible and they skip right from the golden calf to the Left Behind books.
But there's no God, and that's the problem. If you will get rid of the God completely, if people will shed the idea that there's some being out there, that A, created us, and B, gives a fuck about us, if we can do that as a
human
species, the world changes in a dramatically wonderful way.
You think
way.
So?
South Park had a
hilarious episode where Cartman goes in the future 3,000 years,
yeah.
where badgers
right,
can talk, and then they're all fighting because my science is superior to your science.
Yes.
People are... Homo sapiens have a long way to go.
Yeah.
They'll find... It's tribalism.
We do
man.
Have
it's
a...
Tribalism.
We,
sorry, that does not happen in science.
It doesn't
it
happen.
Cannot
no,
happen
I know.
In
it's
science.
Well, I didn't write it. It's just
right.
a funny gag. But
also,
I mean, they'll find...
But it's not a good... Listen, it's not a good example of what happens when you get rid of religion.
But you know, you get rid of all religion... You know people will find new reasons to hate other tribes.
They will have one less reason. That's my point.
Great.
I don't think
it'll be the same. And this is why it won't be the same.
All right.
Because religion basically has existed for years to give authority to prejudice and bias.
I agree.
Okay?
I agree. I call myself
and
I'm a carb.
And the authority comes from believing that the God is there. And he created the universe, et cetera, et cetera.
Right on, but we're talking about the difference between religion and faith, okay? Religion is where someone will tell you, fuck these people, it's okay, I said so, I'm God's emissary. I'm a carb. I'm a Christian anti-religion believer, okay? I follow Jesus. I do believe in God. I have had enough experiences in my life that give me what the Catholics call the sensing the presence of the Holy Spirit, you know, but
you
I don't
know
think
what
God's...
William James called that?
Oh, right on, okay.
The sentiment of rationality. He used the word sentiment very particular because it's an emotion.
It is an emotion.
And
I agree with that.
And it is an emotion.
I agree
and
with that.
It proves
but
nothing, of course.
It proves
but
nothing at all.
It actually points out why there are theists and why there are atheists.
Right, but we all have one thing in common, whether you're an atheist, a progressive person of faith, an agnostic. We all have one thing in common. We don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know. So to say that you'll ever get rid of religion, I think, is a greater superstition than any religion. It's not going to go away. Not in our lifetimes, not in our grandkids' lifetimes.
I disagree. I think
when
it's going
to go
away.
When you teach kids to think critically, they can't be indoctrinated easily, and that's the key.
That's very true.
The key is knowledge.
That's very true. However, I'll say again, religion and faith are two very different things, and there's a lot of people out there who are doing wonderful, beautiful things, who are people of faith who don't belong to religion. They've grown to believe religion's full of shit, but they do have spiritual guidance in their life. They do have a spiritual path or a ministry they're walking, and they use it to make them better people. The best people I've known in my life have been religious people. The worst people I've known in my life have been religious people.
Are they
people.
Doing good things just because they're good, and the spirituality or the religion is the patina they've put on?
Is there necessarily a difference?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
what are the facts?
Are we making the argument that people are only being good out of self-interest? Is that the argument you're making?
No.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood.
I believe people are good naturally. It's reciprocal altruism, but not from their point of view, only from the genetic point of view. People are good because they live in a society. People are also bad because they live in a society because of self-interest. The problem with the human creature and what happened in evolution is we're a mixed bag. We have empathy. We have mirror neurons to help us live in a society and to cooperate.
Yes.
But we also have self-interest.
Yes.
Because we want to replicate. The two, you know, are in conflict constantly. And it's hard to understand, which I think is the origin of the whole concept of original sin. It was standing around saying, wait a minute, I know this is bad what I'm doing.
Yeah.
But I know it's bad, so what's wrong with me?
Because original sin does not appear anywhere in the Bible. That's man-made shit. And it's great that the Catholic Church does it, because
as is the Bible.
The same people who taught me about original sin are also the ones saying that fetuses are completely innocent.
Make
up your mind, douchebag, right. Because what is it? Do we come out evil? Are we this perfect innocent thing?
We'll go to a break right after you add what you're going to add.
Please.
Go ahead, Taylor.
I just wanted to plug my Twitter page. Twitter.com/TaylorComedy.
Okay, right back after this.
This is Kirk Cameron, and I rape children.
You're not Kirk Cameron, and Kirk Cameron doesn't rape anybody.
He doesn't. He rapes art.
You're listening to Art and Atheist on New Dissident Radio and available on the iTunes Store. Today, we would like to give a shout-out to the PhillyGuysRadio.com podcast. Emery and I were guests on that show to speak with one of the Westboro Baptist Church nuts. Westboro Baptist Church, destroying religion one protest at a time.
Yeah, Westboro was pretty cool.
They attack me on Twitter like every day now, man. They come after me so hard on Twitter. And I saw them. They were down I went down to 9/11, to Ground Zero. I live in the neighborhood on the 10-year anniversary. Yeah. And I had never actually seen them in action before. They are professional dickwads.
They really know what they're doing.
They know what they're doing because they have one purpose. Their purpose is to get sued and then sue back and win.
That's what I was saying.
They're all lawyers.
That's all they do. Yeah, they're all lawyers.
Do you know how many cases there have been? Because someone asked them on the show that we talked to, one of the people. I wish I could remember. Steve.
They're commandos because when the cops come and say your time's up, within seconds – all the signs go into these bags, neatly folded. The shirts come off, and they're walking in the street like normal. They're like bank robbers. They know how to just disappear into a crowd immediately.
Yeah, one of them is the leader,
Fred Phelps.
Fred Phelps. Phelps is a lawyer and
disbarred lawyer.
Disbarred. And I think a closeted homosexual. I can say that because I said I think, right?
You can say whatever you want, baby.
You think, therefore he is.
I don't. Right. That's right. That's right. He's never topped me. I just think he might. And there's no question he's a top from the top. But I think that he is a horrifically closeted homosexual. He got the legal information he needed. He got the poison from the Bible. Now, the question I have, and we have to go to – I want to talk about your book, okay, Stephen?
Please.
Fine by me.
But before we jump to the book, it to me, honestly, and I'm going to give you time to respond to this, to me – there is no difference in the picking and choosing that you're illustrating here. They're picking and choosing. You're picking and choosing. When
difference.
I was a Christian, I picked and chose.
There's a big difference. A big difference. Everybody of every religion picks and chooses the parts of their holy book they choose to believe in, right? We all agree on that. Everyone does it. And I have no problem with that. It's the essence of faith. It's impossible to follow all the laws of the Bible. It's right. Anyone who says they believe every part of the Bible hasn't read the Bible.
There was a guy who tried to follow it for a year, wrote a book about it.
Yeah, the Year of Living Biblically. But there are so many contradictions within the Bible, it's impossible to do. You know, and this is why you still have so many Christians who argue that Jesus would support the death penalty. I mean, it's outrageous when you read what Jesus actually said. You know, Carlin used to say America was founded by slave owners who wanted to be free. Well, now you can only be president of this country if you're a follower of Christ who believes in murdering sinners. It's hilarious to me. And now I lost my train of thought.
Do you think Obama's really a follower of Christ?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I do. But I think...
I worry that he is, too.
Well, I wish he was.
You don't think it was
thing.
A Chicago political decision?
Well, maybe it was. But here's the thing. If he was if America was a Christian nation, we wouldn't be talking about public prayer in schools. If we were a Christian nation and followed the teachings of Christ, we would be a nonviolent society that would take care of the sick, that would take care of the poor, and that would take care of our prisoners.
You're right. I love the sentence you said at the setup. If we were a Christian nation, we wouldn't even be talking about prayer in schools.
Yeah.
That is profound.
Matthew 6:5 is where Jesus comes out. And again, you know what? People don't like it, but Jesus says in Matthew 6:5, don't trust those guys praying on the street corner. They're showing off. They're making a scene. They want to be seen, and they're going to get their reward. You want to talk to God? You go into your closet and pray to your Father in private, in secret. Now, when you see like a Pat Robertson on TV, and Pat, I'm half Southern. Pat Robertson actually, as a young minister, performed one of my cousin's weddings. My people grew up right in the shadow of him, and I got to debate Jerry Falwell once on Bill Maher's show, but I have never met Pat Robertson. He's this black-hearted, horrible man. And I, you know, we can go off on that all day. But, you know, when you see Pat Robertson praying on TV with an 800 number for your donations flashing below the screen, he's wagging his dick at what Jesus said in Matthew 6:5. And I always say, would you take a dump on camera? Would you ever actually would you defecate on camera? No. Why?
Wait.
Hang on.
Wait, what are you offering?
It really depends.
If you ask Pat Robertson or any of these people, they would say no, because that's too personal.
Right.
Well, what's more personal than talking to the God of your choice?
Yeah.
When you're doing that, if you're praying and the camera's there, great. But if you're praying in front of a camera, I mean, you not only have you not read the Bible, you're making a mockery of the guy you claim to follow.
Well, once
most
again,
you haven't
really
read the Bible, so it's
exactly. Most people, Santa Claus is the delivery system for the modern form of Christianity.
Indeed. Once again,
Santa Claus is my savior.
Once
again, I celebrate Clausmas. Seriously, if you had a choice between a jolly fat man in a red suit who comes down a chimney and gives you presents, or a guy in a loincloth hanging around on a cross.
Yeah, having been executed
which would
by
you
the
choose?
State.
Yeah.
Well, I know a lot of guys in my neighborhood would take the naked guy, but it's true. And Santa Claus is the stand-in for the Western depiction of God.
Yeah.
He's an old guy up north somewhere who has a list of things you can and can't do, and he sees you when you're sleeping, and he knows when you're awake, and you're going to get
watches
punished.
Watches you when you're peeing.
Yeah, and if you do good, you'll get material. If you follow the rules, you'll get material wealth, and if you don't, you'll get coal, which actually is now material wealth in this country.
but he likes hot chocolate.
He does.
He doesn't really like Coca-Cola.
My mom says
that's a capitalist thing. He likes hot chocolate.
My mom says Santa Claus doesn't exist.
She's full of shit.
He died. He smoked a pipe and that thought of him.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, man. I hate to be the one to tell you.
Why don't you plug something?
I have my own podcast coming out on iTunes starting next week.
Do you really?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
What's it called?
Following in your footsteps. Serious Time with Taylor Williamson.
I talk less than
I'm doing tonight.
Taylor, where can I find you on Twitter?
Taylor Comedy. Are you going to follow me?
I'm going to follow you.
Woot.
I'm so excited. Oh, thanks.
That's really great. And the name of it's not up yet then, huh?
It's going to start on Monday.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. I talk about – I'm very passionate about things.
Right. Well, real quickly so I don't forget, hold on.
I'm trying to
use Siri.
To record
I'm trying to use Siri. No.
God damn it! Going too quick. Have you used the Siri yet?
What do you, have you used the what yet?
Siri is the new talking feature on iPhone. God, and, I was trying to tell her to remind me to check out his new podcast.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, no worries. No worries.
Is there a way to make it stuffier in here? Can we?
I know. In fact, do open the door, please. Yeah,
just
we don't need the door closed.
Just a crack.
But okay. Well, I want to talk about your book,
please.
Traveling in Space.
Yes.
Stephen Paul Leyva has written, here it is, Traveling in Space, and I did some reading. I didn't finish the whole book, and I was really, really bowled over by the idea alone, and I'm anxious as to where it goes. Tell us a little about it.
Well, the idea, you're talking about the basic concept,
yeah,
which is a first contact novel, which is always a novel of the first time Earth people and aliens meet. But it's a first contact novel written completely from the point of view of the aliens.
Right.
Or it can be called a 21st century Gulliver's Travels with Homo sapiens as the Lilliputians. We are the Lilliputians.
Nice.
So that's basically what it is. But it plays around a little bit with the science fiction trope of aliens coming to Earth, which there's basically two, which is they're here to conquer us. They're saliva dripping monsters. They conquer us, or they impregnate our women, or they steal our water, or they eat us. Or they're here to uplift us like a big brother, or to make us into
almost
angels like, or show us how stupid we are.
Right.
What I have is my aliens, which are called life.
Mm-hmm.
We call ourselves Homo sapiens. They call themselves life because they truly believe they're the only life in the universe.
Ah.
And they think they're the matrix of life. So they're out in a big, huge ship called a life ship, and they're doing fact finding. They're scientists, basically. Now, the ship is huge and miles within and all that, and it's like a little city in there. And they're just trying to understand the universe. They're searching for knowledge.
Right.
And they literally stumble upon Earth because they're looking for a planet that can support life, because eventually they need to seed their own life. They're the matrix. They need to seed.
Okay.
Well, they find a planet that not only can support life but has life, and some of it is somewhat cognizant, and that's pretty interesting to them. So they decide they got to take a detour. They got to go check this out.
And by cognizant, you, of course, are talking about the dolphins.
No. I don't like dolphins. I like tuna.
You choose tuna over dolphins.
Tuna is much you can can them better.
God.
You can get rid of them. Can that baby. So they come and they start to study, and they find things interesting,
right,
like marriage, which they don't have.
Right.
They don't have two-parent families.
Okay.
If you want to
neither do we, really.
Not anymore.
Well, if you want a parent, you order up procreation sex as opposed to pleasure sex. And all your sex comes from pleasure pals who are professionals.
Right.
Actually, it's always their avocation. Their vocation is something else, but they're genetically good at it.
That's what I call a spiritual calling. In
right?
Life,
and,
by
right?
The way. That's a spiritual calling.
It's like that. They're the best at it. And one of
that's why
the female lead, so to speak, in the book was both the owner of a field float team. This is a sports that's played in zero gravity. And she's a pleasure pal. But later she becomes a researcher on this whole concept of marriage, which is strange to them, as is the concept of religion, because they do not have religion and never needed to have religion.
Wait, you're telling us the whole story, then we can read it. Like, I know what happened.
Yes, you can, because I'm a much better writer than I am a speaker.
Yeah. Well, I was just
the brilliance of my prose, you are going to want to check out.
Oh, yeah, it sounds
nicely
really cool.
Put, Stephen. Oh, yes.
I was envisioning
nice.
The movie. I want to see that. Sounds
I just,
like it's going to be.
I'm just
good.
Excited about a chick who's a pleasure. She gives pleasure and is a researcher,
and then
like
and also
objects.
Into sports as well.
There you,
sure.
And good God, man.
She might be a tranny.
Better yet,
sexy space tranny.
She's I should have brought it.
Wait a minute. Sex tranny prompted you to say, "Oh, I should have brought it."
Because
what synapses just fired, Stephen?
I asked some people on certain websites like Atheist Nexus and Rational Responders.
Mm-hmm.
I said, "I'll give you a free download of the book. If you like it, spread the word. Word of mouth. This is guerrilla marketing." And the first guy who read it loved it, and we actually put him on the cover of the book. He's the back cover quote from Nate, No More Crazy People on Rational Responders.
Nice.
And he said, this book is bloody brilliant. And I really liked it because of the alliteration. I'm a sucker for alliteration. But he has just sent me today, he did a drawing of my female lead character. Because the thing you have to understand about my aliens, now, when they first come, it's all from the point of view of the aliens. You don't know what they look like. And they're talking about how they have to go down. They meet the president. The first one dies of a stroke because he doesn't see the aliens. What he sees is a bubble. A bubble is just a communication tool. They have bubble technology.
Oh.
And the first president dies of a stroke. The vice president immediately quits. And so they wind up with the Speaker of the House. So finally they go down and they meet the Speaker of the House and they're coming out of their bubble and they talk about how everybody's given them this strange salute, which is a drop of the jaw. Everybody's dropping their jaw as they walk by. And so they reciprocate and they start dropping their jaw and they walk down the red carpet and then they go into the some big room in the White House and someone announces the President of the United States and he walks up to them and he walks slowly dropping his jaw. Right. And then the last line of the first chapter is, holy shit, you're fucking gorgeous. And they are. My aliens there's one alien whose name is literally the very ugly man. But to us, he would look like a young George Clooney.
Wow.
So that's what he looks like. So they are fucking gorgeous. Wow. And this guy, Nate, has just done a drawing of she, who later is named Sheila. I got to send it to you.
That's thinking outside the bubble.
It's really wonderful. Yeah, very much outside of the bubble.
So how did John Boehner handle this get together?
Actually, I thought of him more as Tip O'Neill.
Tip O'Neill?
A Tip O'Neill type. An old-fashioned pole, Tip O'Neill type, and he becomes quite a character in the book.
Is religion dealt with very much in your book?
Yes, religion is dealt with when they start they send off several members of their council to study different things.
Yeah.
Now, first they go to the White House because they find the language. They only have one language, so they find it interesting that Earth has a lot of language, and they go to the most spoken language and the biggest place where it's spoken because they figured that's the ascending society. So they come to America, and they go to the White House and what have you. So they study their government. They want to study what knowledge these Earth people have. They call them other life. They don't call them Earth people because they're life.
Right.
So the other are other life. And when they start to study religion, it just boggles their mind a little bit because they get reports on it and there's scenes in there where they're talking about.
And are they the only species on their home world? Like, are they amazed to come to a planet with billions of different species?
No. They have diversity of life and they love life. The main thing about the life is they love life
until they meet the pro-life people.
They love knowledge. They love life. They love knowledge. They hate death, and they hate ignorance. They swear a lot. They cuss a lot. But their swearing is not based on sex and excrement. It's based on death and decay.
And that's another thing about religion, entropy. Because this is all, I think that, you know, if you notice in our English language, at least, all of our curse words, all of our vulgarities and obscenities all come based on the human body or its functions.
Right.
There are no bad words for murder or theft or boy bands. It's all about, you know, what the body does. And this all comes from St. Paul. You know, I mean, this all comes from St. Paul, who was the original guy. Jesus in the Bible, no sex hang-ups from the guy. Uh-huh. None at all. But St. Paul, who, to bring it full circle, many theologians believe was a closeted gay man living in the first century Holy Land. His letters make a lot more sense when you consider how he could be so forgiving of sinners. Yet when it comes to his own body, he is disgusted by this unholy urges that God's put in him that must be resisted. And yet you can be a murderer and he'll forgive you. But, the sex is bad. And that's why all of our curse words are all about the body.
Exactly. And that's why I created in my aliens, our curse words are based on death and decay.
Wow.
Troc.
So that's what it is.
Trock is the new word.
In your story...
Trock?
Yeah, it's the new dirty word. It means boy band. Let's spread the word. Trock. Fucking trocker.
In your story, do the Republicans build a fence to keep the aliens out?
No. I would. They're scared of them.
Yeah.
When the aliens first arrive, people start committing mass suicide. And the aliens they're taken aback by this. They're very, very upset. So they send down all these bubbles that are broadcasting a hum. One of the Life Council members is called the Very Large Man, and he's a composer and performer of hums, which is their basic music. And the hums calm everybody down. Now, the funny thing is the hums are on some kind of a vibrancy, which makes all these people feel like they're finding heaven. And in the end of the book, I don't know if I'd give it away, but I will because I want to tease you. But eventually, the leader of the ship, who was just simply called our leader, and the president of the United States are bemoaning the fact that on Earth, just full of problems, and a lot of it can be put down to the overpopulation, the 6 to 7 billion people we have. So they say, well, if we got rid of 5 billion, it would be a paradise on Earth. So they send down 5 billion bubbles that snatch up 5 billion humans, including the Pope, who, by the way, is Pope Peter II, who had been the Archbishop of Canterbury, but he brought the two churches together, and he hopes to get all the religions under one big dome of the Catholic Church. Anyway, and he sends them off toward the sun, and they're all attracted to these bubbles by this one particular hum, and then the bubble encases them and takes them off to the sun, or as our leader says, that's what they wanted. It's going towards the light.
So they hate death, but they send 5 billion.
Well, that's
our
leader.
I got to read.
It's only the leader.
Gotcha.
Because he's bored because he doesn't really need to lead. But now he finds a planet where I could lead.
Okay.
So they're going off, but the hum, the particular hum that attract them, the Earth people don't know it, but it's actually called Pleasure Pals of Plenty. And it was written by the large man when he was young and looking to make a few bucks. So,
did they take Kerry Russell?
They did, but the bubble burst.
But sounds not too far from the floor, right?
Not too far from the
floor. Reminds me of Heinlein. I read Heinlein when I was a little girl, and all the names and stuff of everything. Yeah,
I like that, how they talk in a generic type of just simplicity. It's kind of.
Right, and they use no contractions when they talk.
Yeah.
I love that.
Like deaf people.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, like David Caruso.
Yeah.
I do not understand why he is using contractions.
Yes. And that just sets him apart.
So moving on. Thanks for telling us about your book.
Well, thank you very much for hearing about it.
Sounds great.
I have to ask Taylor. Last time we spoke, Taylor, you told me that you're how do I put this? Courting a Muslim chick? That's not the right phrase. That's not how I'd put it.
She wears a do-rag on her head.
You're talking to a Muslim girl overseas or something? Can you talk about this? And you don't have to.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You don't?
You know what I've learned recently appearing on podcasts all across the world is that I talk about people, and then they listen to things that I when they talk about them, and then it gets weird. You know, I've decided that my coolest fans and the creepiest ones listen to every single thing I do.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
And then
and are often the same.
They're all the same person. Yeah. I have one fan. My mom's really creepy.
You want to plug something for your mom? That was not the joke I made.
Oh,
what the hell?
Shit.
Why do you...
That was like a single entendre.
I think that love sees no
what are you doing?
Race.
What are you doing? Where were you headed then?
Love sees no chromosome.
The girl's name is Grace, you're saying.
Grace. Love sees no grace.
Okay. Are you going to travel over to some...
I was thinking about visiting another country.
What country?
London.
Okay.
Well, here's the interesting thing. I have a friend in Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
And she's like, you should come visit. And I was like, you know, I'm Jewish. You know? And I was like, because they don't allow Jews, you know? Yeah, you can't have Israel on your passport or be Jewish. Yes. And I said, if I went over there, they would murder me. She's like, I don't know if they'd murder you.
No, you're American. They own you.
I don't.
That's exactly right.
I could get in there, I think, because I'm Taylor Williamson. And the day I got back from Israel, I lost my passport.
Yeah.
So I think.
Oh, yeah. You probably. Did you do the birthright thing where you had a stamp in it?
Yes.
Okay. Because you're Jewish, right?
Yeah.
And so. So now you have a clean passport, and you're Taylor
Williamson.
That doesn't sound too Jewish, does it?
Mm. No, it sounds zero Jew.
Yeah,
no,
that sounds firm Christ killer to me.
English.
Thank you.
I got this non-Jew face.
Yes.
That's why you're going to London.
I don't believe you're a Jew now that I think about it.
Thank you so much.
I think you're just trying... I think you're just trying to succeed in business.
I thought being Jewish would... The only time being Jewish has ever helped me in my entire career as... Bud Friedman, founder of the Hollywood Improv, saw me perform when I was like 18. And he's like, What kind of name is Williamson for a Jew boy? And then he booked me in Reno.
Well, that's good.
Really?
So that's yeah.
But he wasn't angry, just disappointed.
Was he punishing me by booking me in Reno?
That's exactly right. He sent you to a hell.
No, if he wanted to punish you, he'd book you in Laughlin. You're fine.
Oh, okay.
Bud Friedman once forced a chicken salad sandwich down me Just for Laughs Comedy Festival in Montreal.
God, I thought this was going to be a bestiality story
really,
for a
second. The chicken something.
It's not exciting, but I had a connection. We had a connection.
There you go. Yeah. Bud Friedman, are you doing the whole, are you working the improvs now, or how'd that go? How'd the gig go? Because my last time in Reno, I dropped mushrooms. I walked backstage to watch Bobby Slayton. You know Bobby? Mm-hmm. You guys know Bobby?
Yeah, was he performing backstage or was he on stage?
No, he was working the big theater across from the little club I was working. So I finished my set. I went over to watch Slayton, and I had just dropped mushrooms. And I'd warned him, I'm gonna come in and watch your set from backstage, and I might be tweaking on shrooms. He's like, oh, don't worry about it. So he set up he had them set an easy chair right behind the slit where I could just sit and watch him back there. And I'm tripping balls and watching him and just howling, laughing. And then all of a sudden, he yanks the curtain back and goes, that man is high! It's back to his show. I had to run away. I don't remember how our show ended. I had to talk to him the following day.
And the moral of that story is I have to talk to you about a shroom connection.
Okay, we'll talk. You do want to meet God.
I'm sorry.
Please, go ahead. I think most Christians should do shrooms.
I wish.
Once in their life. I mean, like, there's a level of faith that they don't even know.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree. Marijuana fan. I don't mind it. I just don't. I don't think it's a good drug. I think mushrooms are a great motherfucking drug.
I think mushrooms or acid or ecstasy could actually
change the world.
Yeah, they could change atheists.
Yeah, yeah. You think? But I'm an atheist.
Yeah,
I'm an example of how.
I did acid when I was 17 the first time, and it deepened my faith in a way I didn't know imagined. It made me have very. It was the first step on me being able to drop religion.
Yeah,
but it actually deepened my faith, and I've talked to a lot of people of different faiths who had the same experience.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not surprised.
It didn't deepen my faith. I did it when I was pretty young. It made me realize how alone and small that really? I was on this.
I think you were hanging out with creeps when you did it. Then,
did you have a bad trip? Really?
No, it was an amazing trip. I listened to 5 hours of music programmed into a music player, and I listened to every single trippy song that's out there, including Jimi Hendrix and Beatles.
I only like mushrooms if they're sautéed.
You don't do the drugs?
Never.
You can put those on pizza.
Including religion.
Nicely put. One time I dropped a bunch of mushrooms with a bunch of friends, and we all thought it would be smart to put on Fantasia. And
no, it's terrible. You know, right? Yeah, it's very, very scary.
We put on Fantasia. That didn't happen to us. It should have. We put on Fantasia. We're all sitting there, and I had set a little camera up to record us all. And right? So we're all sitting it's four of us on a couch, and we're all staring for, I don't know what. You lose track of time, so I don't know how long we sat there. And finally, I just went, is anybody else watching this? And everybody just jumps and goes, this really sucks, man! This is horrible!
Yeah, Yellow Submarine is a better
choice. We just turned off the TV and spent a couple hours watching a lamp.
I always thought the only way you can watch Fantasia is high.
No way.
No, it's really bad.
No way.
I think it's one of the worst animated films ever made.
That's why you can't watch it high.
I was in animation for over 20 years.
You so. do animation. Do you know John Over? He was on the show. Have you ever met John?
I think I know of them, but I haven't really been involved since I produced the animation for Space Jam.
Space Jam, right?
Yeah, Space Jam.
That was your big one.
Yeah.
Cool.
Michael Jordan and Bugs Bunny.
Yeah.
People used to always ask me, did you meet Michael Jordan?
Oh,
and
Christ.
I said, why would I want a crick in my neck? I'm short. You can't see that on the radio.
You guys want to know what I did today?
No.
No.
Go.
That's why I asked. Some people may not care for the information.
I want to know. I want to know everything about you, Taylor.
I'm dying. I watched one of your videos on the internet.
I followed Taylor on Twitter today. That's what I did.
Thanks, John Fugelsang.
You're welcome.
The best.
That's awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
Way cooler than a Steve guy.
I'll be spamming you later on.
Nice.
OMG! I can't believe this blog about you.
You know, today I took Propecia and watched Wolf Blitzer. That's what I did.
Fuck?
Alone? You did that alone without a spotter? Are you nuts?
My roommate was sleeping in the other room, but he was in the same... in case something bad happened. You know, but I didn't take when I
talk, Wolf Blitz are free based Propecia. That's why his head looks like that.
I keep forgetting to do my job. Okay, we'll be right back after this. You're listening to Ardent Atheist on New Dissident Radio and available on the iTunes Store. Today's episode brought to you in part by author Frank Albritton. You can download Frank's new book, Ambitious Man Microwave Dinner, onto your Kindle from Amazon, as well as his first book, The Cricket Chirped Doom, also available on Lulu.com. And now back to Ardent Atheist. Nonsense you can believe in. We're talking with John Fugelsang, Stephen Paul Leyva, and Taylor Williamson.
Can we talk about Space Jam?
Yeah.
Sure, if you want to.
I wanted to talk about it before the break, but I had my witty comment from 5 minutes ago to
It's the only movie with Bill Murray and Larry Bird together.
Yes,
it is. Right? Yeah. You want me to reset you up? I can reset you up.
For Space Jam?
So, Stephen, you worked on Space Jam. That was your big thing, right?
Yeah, I produced the animation for Space Jam.
Awesome. That's great.
In fact, I saved Warner Brothers' ass, but they'll never admit it.
I did the animation for the gay porn version, which is called Face Jam.
What's your porn name? We need to know your porn name, John.
My porn name? My last name is Danish for huge apparatus.
My porn name, I actually have one. I used it when I edited porn. It was, everybody, you know what it is. Edgar Allan Poe.
I like my porn name, I came up with it when I was in porn. I just said your joke back to you.
Yeah, you really did.
I'm so egoistic. If I had a porn name, it would be Stephen Paul Leyva.
Ah, right. Yeah. There you go. That's how much you're into yourself.
Yes.
But your name has to represent your package in some way, I think.
My porn name is Ivana Spittengubble.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not. It's Heather Henderson.
No, it's not.
I thought you had a goddamn Space Jam joke that I sent you.
No, all I had to say was, can we talk about Space Jam?
Sure.
That was it?
I have a...
Driest comic in the room.
I have a...
No one gets you.
I have a comment back to our current topic.
Yeah.
I'm really excited. I spent 3 hours today. It only took me 3 hours to find an article that said that the average penis size is 3 inches. And so I'm average.
Why did you? I get it.
Did the sentence end with the words "in Asia"?
It was written by a fourth grader, actually.
Oh, okay.
That's not true, by the way.
Why would I lie to you?
It's just not true.
I would never.
What is the average?
Two.
I have
two.
It. Yeah. I have it.
If you were on that.
Wait, what wasn't true? You're saying that you've seen my.
And Taylor will be hosting the new game show. Are you hung like a fourth grader?
See what I mean? He brings the religion and the jokes.
We prepared that before.
There was religion.
I wish we had more time because I would want to talk more about the Bible and
circumcised penis.
I can talk about, yeah, that's.
I know, we need another hour.
Well, what did you want to say about the Bible?
Well, you know, my whole thing about the Bible, and I've repeated it over and over again, is that I see what you're saying about how it has, how did you refer to it? Doesn't have. Has truth, but it doesn't have facts.
Well, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of truth, but not a lot of facts. I mean, I think one of the reasons why Star Wars was so popular with kids my age growing up was that it actually distilled the Bible, the Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker story, to the God and Jesus, because the father's a lot more powerful, but he's a dick with a very likable son.
But aren't there recollections? Aren't there other... It's a repeat of other truths. I mean, aren't those truths...
Yeah, of course. The story... The miracles of Jesus are in many ways lifted totally from the story of the Egyptian legends of Horus.
Doesn't that make you pause? And say, well, is this story not true? And why would I read the Bible if it's lifted anyway? And then does that bring me to believe who authored the Bible? And then who was?
In other words, why do you believe the Bible when you know that it's just clearly
right,
a regurgitation of ideas?
I didn't say I believe the Bible. I said there's a lot of truth in the Bible. And for me,
but why that particular book?
Well, look, I viewed Jesus.
Yeah, why Jesus? Why not the Muslim belief, the Islams? Why not Buddha? Why not something else?
Cultural.
Why do you go with that one? Besides the obvious that it was fed to you by your parents.
Well, I was raised, I was an extremely Catholic family. We used to have open casket reunions. But for me, when I was really little, I wanted to watch Battlestar Galactica when it first premiered. My dad wouldn't let me because it was on too late. My dad was a principal of a high school, and he said, "You can't stay up." And I'm like, "Well, I'm going to stay awake till 11 o'clock anyway, just to spite you." And he was like, "Well, go ahead, but you're not watching TV." So I'm lying in bed really late at night, and my father shows up in my bedroom all of a sudden. And he says, "Come here, I want to show you something." And he drags me down the hall. And I thought, oh, he's going to let me watch Battlestar Galactica. My dad's cool after all. I don't have a shitty dad, you know, because I go to church all the time. I go through the motions. I kiss the ring. We do all the holy days. I say grace. I say my prayers. And you don't let me stay up to watch Battlestar Galactica? Wow. Okay, I get to watch. But it wasn't Battlestar Galactica. He wanted me to watch the late news because they were showing the footage of Jimmy Carter signing the Camp David Peace Accord between Menachem Begin and Anwar Sadat. And my dad, the Franciscan, couldn't believe that an American had helped bring peace to one corner of the Middle East, and he wanted his kid there to watch it. Now, it meant nothing to me, but I saw how much it meant to my father.
It's a half-beautiful story, because I think he should have allowed you to do both.
Well, maybe, but my father, you know, growing up, it was just Gandhi, Jesus, Dr. King. Gandhi, right. Jesus, Dr. King.
Right.
Ronald Reagan and the Pope were clowns. And in the look on my father's face as he was beaming, watching this, that a Christian, a Muslim, and a Jew embracing over the concept of ending violence, I got, in that moment, everything that America and Christianity could and should be. I don't need to believe in meta-human comic book stories. The resurrection, you know, I think that in many ways, I think you can look in the Bible as metaphor. It's the star of it is the guy who only talks in metaphor and parable, yet it's impossible for these Christians to view it as metaphor and parable, which is why I talk about truth versus facts. There's one theme in the Bible that's consistent, which is order and chaos. There's chaos, God puts order, man throws it into chaos, God puts order. Genesis, you know, it's not a literal 7-day story. There's the void, and then God puts order. Man breaks the law, the covenant of God, eats the tree in this ridiculous sci-fi story about the talking snake, which has nothing to do with Jesus. These Christians who get hung up on believing in Genesis over evolution are missing the whole point.
But Genesis never proves evolution because we don't have talking snakes anymore.
Well, that's very funny, but you know, that's nothing to do with the teachings of Christ. These people that are anti-science, they're just trying. You know, I think 99% of douchebaggery is people who take honor thy mother and father a little bit too seriously. But then you read throughout the whole Bible, what is the whole theme? Mankind keeps fucking it up, and God keeps giving him another chance.
But forget that's about the Bible. What makes you believe that God is real?
Well,
that's different for everybody. And the whole story, though,
and the whole concept of God is different for everybody too. Some people believe that God is this invisible, angry, alcoholic step God. I mean, you know, you're a kid reading the Bible. You read about this God. He loves you, but he'll send you to burn in hell. And he's almighty and all powerful, but he's deeply insecure and needs you to worship him. And
I know you.
And it's like that's not a God. That's an alcoholic dad.
I know. How do you believe any of it, though? I just am amazed by it.
But no two people believe the same thing.
I know. I think it's true, too.
And maybe the Buddhists are right, and we're manifesting our own reality. And when you die, whatever you think is going to happen is what happens.
Right.
I don't know. That's the one thing we all have in common.
For the record, I'm proud to have met you. I'm glad to know you. And
right
I'm
on.
Glad there are people who do believe, who are like you.
If you're going to call fundamentalist Christians morons, you're just going to make them feel like they're more right. I'm going to go meet them on their own terms with their own book.
Yeah.
I'm not going to try and say, oh, you superstitious idiot, because then they're just going to feel like they're being persecuted, and they're going to feel more justified in their bigotry, selfishness, and self-defeating stupidity.
Yeah.
I'm going to say, hey, this guy Jesus you claim to follow, here's what he actually said, because he was a peaceful, radical, nonviolent, but, you know, anti-death penalty, homeless Middle Eastern Jew.
Yeah. Are you sure you're just not posing?
Posing what?
Because you're not making sense.
You're posing as a believer.
He's pulling that out. He's pulling it out.
I wear this to take it back from the douchebag.
Hey, that is a big ass fucking cross.
No. The joke, honey. The joke. What's with the lowercase t?
Oh, fuck that one up. Shit.
You know, Rick Overton said to me, why are you wearing their symbol? And I said, because I'm taking it back from the douchebags. I'm also taking the flag back from the assholes, too.
Ah, I say fuck the flag.
Can I plug my MySpace, baby?
I didn't know you were in a shitty band. Please, plug away.
But that's all that's left.
This discussion really brings it down to something that's discussed on this show a lot. What is a theist? What is an atheist?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it really boils down, again, I'll go back to William James and the sentiment of rationality. If you think there's a God, if you believe it, if you have faith, you're a theist. If you don't have it, you're an atheist. It's just like asexual and sexual.
Irrespective of religion, whatever religion is.
Irrespective of religion.
Right.
Wait, can I say something?
You want to say something, too? Go ahead.
I just thought you were saying wrap it up.
You son of a bitch. You're just fucking with me.
I have something to say.
Okay.
I'm going to kill you.
It might take like 10 minutes, but like, I feel like you guys are not willing to hear the other side of the story.
Is that what you think?
Well, because you are.
And that's why I want to tell you about Dianetics.
Well, the show's called Ardent Atheist, and you already bought like the backdrop and the logo and everything. Like, what you can't become Christians if you heard this. If you started agreeing because you're 36 episodes in, you can't go back.
I want to thank my guests for being here today. You guys, thank you so much.
I'm not finished.
You keep going if you want. I also want to thank my co-host Heather Henderson and New Dissident Radio.
Thank you.
Tune in next week where our guests will be Bobcat Goldthwait, Tommy Chong, and Ed Krasnick. We'll be talking about.
I want to be on that show.
Yeah, I know, right? We'll be talking about pot. That's probably what we'll be talking about because Tommy.
I really want to be on that show.
Pot is God.
God made me a believer.
That's it for episode 36. I'm your host, Emery Emery.
And I'm Heather Henderson. Our theme music, courtesy of the sound editor of The Aristocrats, Eric Wilson. And special thanks to our Facebook publicist, Cameron Wendhurst.
You've been listening to Ardent Atheist on New Dissident Radio. Ardent Atheist is a product of natural selection.
Bye, everybody.
Guys, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You're listening to Ardent Atheists on NewDissidentRadio.com. Fun for Jigga Jews everywhere.
New Dissident Radio. On the interweb.